Oh, groovy, baby.
Come with me if you want to live.
But hey, enough of that. Now it's time for this. Hey, welcome to the Indie Circuit Show. I don't even know. Something like 209, that's what it is. For those of you keeping track at home. My name's Mal, with me as always.
Promi.
And we are here to bring the gospel of indie music and talk a little bit about dumb stuff that appears in our everyday life. So, you know, what's been going on, man? We saw some news that we're going to talk about a little bit later. I have kind of a funny story I wanted to talk about as well from my work. But you got anything going on other than just buried in insanity, like always?
not too much, but you know, one thing. The other night we did a slow... I was here and I did a slow robot go-go with you. We're talking about movies we'd seen, and one of them I forgot to mention, which is not a new... I mean, it is a new movie. It came out last year, but it was an Oscar contender. One that I'd been meaning to see for a while. It was Get Out.
By Jordan
Peele or Pele.
You know what I'm noticing? If you don't have TV... You have no concept of what's coming out, because I'm on a computer at work, so I don't peruse the internet anymore. I don't look at things. I don't look at Rotten Tomato. I'm checked out.
See, I have
Flixster
on my phone, which is Rotten Tomatoes reviews. So you know, I see what's coming out. Well, plus, I have a vested interest since I have.
Yeah, no kidding. Access to the movies. I miss it a little bit. You know. Yeah. Well, go back. I'm sorry. So yeah.
No, it's okay. This is a segue. Because all I'm going to say is you know, it was nominated for Best Picture, and I really didn't see it. It's a horror movie. It has a unique angle, which I think is probably why it got a lot of the attention it got. And the horror movie genre, I'll say it wasn't bad. I mean, it was better than a lot of them. But, you know, like Stephen King's It came out last year and it was not nominated. And it's the highest grossing horror movie of all time now.
Hey, you said that. I was like, what? That's really
so
crazy.
It's kind of crazy that, you know, like two movies basically of the same genre. One, which was massively popular based on a book, you know, that's, 25 years old, that's considered one of the greatest works of fiction from a particular writer who is considered one of the greatest writers in that genre.
Yeah.
And didn't even get a nomination. And then this other one, that wasn't a bad movie. It was a good movie, more or less. I mean, it suffers from the same problems that a lot of horror movies do, which is certain kinds of plot twists that are kind of like, that's probably not how that really would have played out.
Yeah, like, I call BS.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't go into that kind of... It was funny because it was a movie I wanted to see, and then I think after it got nominated, my expectations of it... It's like if it hadn't been nominated for an Oscar, I think I would have seen it and liked it, but because it was nominated for an Oscar, I'm like nitpicky now because I'm like, wait a minute.
That's funny.
But yeah, it was a good movie overall.
That's
just
cool.
Would have been better if I hadn't gone into it thinking
this
was, you know,
crazy.
Best Picture nomination.
You know, and of all the genres, horror is, I don't want to say my least favorite, but I'm not really, I don't mind old horror, but I don't like new torture porny super horror. And I know that's not all horror. Horror has many different sub-genres.
That is one of the most popular ones, though, because to me that's sloppy. It's lazy because instead of doing something and instead of crafting a story or giving characters motivation or whatever, it's just, you know, we're going to gross you out.
Yeah. And look at this. Here's some weird guy. He must be really rich because now you're trapped in his basement. Who cares? You know,
I mean, to some degree, I guess that's not exactly new. They've just gotten the effects have just gotten better, which has allowed them to lean on them more.
Yeah.
I mean, because, if you think about what Friday the 13th was.
Or Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, well, Freddy Krueger got incredibly campy.
Yeah, the first one was incredible.
I mean, Freddy Krueger was a kind of a different animal only because towards the end there, he was cracked, you know, like you were really rooting for the bad guy most of the time. You realize that by the end of it, something had to happen that would kill him, quote unquote.
You're like, oh God, please go away forever.
Until the next movie, like something had to temporarily put him away for good, temporarily. But through three quarters of the movie, he's the star. He's the one, you're not like, oh, he's going to come out. You're like, oh, come on, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you really wanted to see those kids get it. I don't know. But yeah, intelligent horror is not very common.
No, it sure isn't. All right, here's some music for your ears.
Everybody, I'm from Holland. Isn't that weird?
Oh, it's Ozzy Osbourne.
A naked corpse lying face down in a pool of blood. The decapitated body of a beautiful girl. The smell of death is in the air. Someone should have warned them about the horror on Snape Island. But what was the real horror? You'll have to see it to believe it. This horror of horrors. Horror on Snape Island. A modern-day story of fear and terror. See Horror on Snape Island. It will make you tremble with fear. From the Fanfare Corporation, rated R.
Skis, huh?
That's right.
Great. They're yours?
Uh-huh.
Both of them?
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, that was Electric Floor from their EP Fader. And played Blue Drive, Charming Dress, and Borderland.
So Electric Floor, do you think that's like an elevator, or do you think that's like they're shocking you?
Good question. I think that's like if you're third floor sundries and women's garters, fourth floor,
okay,
electric
so like an
floor.
Elevator. Not yeah. Like that scene from Stephen King's Cat's Eye where they put the cat in the cage in the pen and turn on the juice or and then later on do it to the smoker's wife when he doesn't quit smoking.
No, not that at all. So anyway.
You have any idea what I'm talking about?
Yeah, a little bit.
It was an old movie.
Yeah, but. It is. So I was, funny thing at work today, I work at a smaller place, but it's expanding. And
that was my waistline once.
Yeah, me too. And as I've said numerous times on this show, you know, basically, it's a lot of. If you walked in, you'd think it was like a model agency because it's a lot of young kids and young people. And I think I'm there.
You're like, and then there's me.
Yeah, there's like two or three of us that I think are mandatory fat old person hire. Like you know, they have to have a certain amount of ethnicity and certain amount of old person.
Where you come in is they need somebody who's a little bit beat down, has a certain work ethic, and feels like. He's at risk, so...
So I mentioned that...
I need somebody there to actually accomplish stuff.
No. I'm just like... They're like... You know, I'm the old guy that doesn't like understand stuff. I do, but I just let on like I'm dumb. So I'm walking in there and I'm washing my dish and I hear a heated discussion in the lunchroom. You know how sometimes you lend an ear. You don't let on that you're listening, but you're listening, you know. Mm-hmm. And the one woman I know pretty well... I mean, like, as well as you're going to know somebody at work. And there's this other kid there... And he's talking like really fast about like God and afterlife and that kind of stuff, you know. And I'm thinking
like great water cooler conversation.
And I'm like, oh man. And I started thinking about it, you know, how I was when I was younger, kind of maybe more idealistic and would talk about stuff like that. And then I also thought about where we came from, the Cube Farm, where there was people everywhere. And there was like those one or two people that talked about that stuff and like prodigied it. They wanted to know what you thought about stuff and you never answered because you're like, I don't want to talk about this. And then that's how you learn not to talk about that stuff, you know.
Like religion, politics, and...
Sex and money.
Yeah.
Sex, money, and religion and politics, I just don't talk about it. Because no one's going to learn anything from this... This debate. It's just how
you're
right
not
going to
change
though.
Anybody's opinion, and nobody's going to change yours. And
so the kid is... I don't know his name. It's like letters. It's not like USB or like, you know, but it's like, you know, CK or KD or something. I don't know what
DJ
it is. Yeah, whatever. I don't know. I know him. Like, if I look at him, I'll be like, oh, there's that guy. He sits, you know, near me. But and then the other girl, KDO, I'll call her. That's, you know, I know her enough that I talk to her sometimes. So I walked over and I was like, you know what? I'm going to ask because I got to know. You know, so I walked over and I said, hey, got a minute? And I sat down. I was like, so I heard you talking about this, you know, this stuff at the lunchroom. I was like, I said, is it, I just was trying to feel out if it's because I'm older and I just have learned over the years not to talk about that stuff or did you initiate it? And it come to find out she has recently lost a friend from college. And I mean, she's a young lady. She's young, you know. So mm-hmm. Her friend was 26 when she died of cancer.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, well, that's sad. I'm sorry about that. And she's like, no, it's all right. She said, you know, so he was going through, this kid was going through something too, so they just kind of started this discussion. So it was mutual.
So it was like, oh, okay, so this isn't just a bad work conversation. This is two people consoling each other with the idea of an afterlife.
Talking, or do you believe, and just that kind of stuff. And it made me think about back in the day when I would talk to people at work, in other than a, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
I got my coffee. All right. And then walking back to your cubicle.
Well, it wasn't a weird, guarded, false conversation all the time.
And I do miss that to some degree, but also...
And you didn't have to go to a private room to have a non-weird, guarded, false conversation.
And it was one of those things where I was like, you know, I did used to like to talk to people. But then as I think as you get older, you just kind of, not close in on yourself, but I mean, I just don't, you know, you kind of learn and you're like, it's just better to shut up. I'm not going to sit in some office getting yelled at because I talked about what God I do or don't believe in, or what politician I think is or isn't, you know. So you just...
Well, I think the other thing with that, too, is it's kind of like the problem with an open office, is it's sort of harder to have consensual conversations like that.
Yeah.
Because you know, even though the two people having the conversation may be fine with it...
And they are, usually.
You have to worry about everyone, the entire auxiliary, because the whole idea of that open office is that everyone can hear you. To encourage conversation. But that
doesn't do it at all.
And actually, it does the reverse of it, really.
Exactly.
Like in the widget factory, where when you want to have a real conversation, you have to go find some place where there's nobody around.
Yeah, and it's
which
so
makes
weird.
It seem weird and conspiratorial when you see people going off in pairs or groups of three to a room, like, you know, like looking around, like they're planning the next Unabomber strike or something, and it's just because, you know, they want to talk about something personal and you can't anywhere.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I miss those big walls. Like, I liked bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, I come from a graphics world. Graphic artists
like to be in prisons.
I was.
It's true.
I was kind of a little bit extroverted compared to most other people.
Yeah, I'd say
but
so.
By and large, you get into the graphic field because you like to be in a little desk in a dark little corner and not get talked to unless you need some graphics made or something, you know. And that's traditionally, you know. Now, that's not, you can't say that for everybody. So it was just one of those things where I was like, I kind of miss the big walls and offices and I don't need, you know. But I don't know. It was, and afterwards I said thanks and she said, oh, no problem, you know, because she's nice. She's one of the ones that I talk to sometimes because she's kind of cheery and, you know, has a good outlook on stuff. So I was like, I approached her asking her take on it because I'm like, because I was hoping it was going to be she didn't initiate it and she got jumped, you know.
Yeah.
That's the best kind of story. But unfortunately,
like, oh, no, he started talking and I kept trying to make the non-eye contact. I got to go. I kept looking at my wrist, even though I wasn't wearing a watch.
No, it wasn't. I was like, oh, damn it. Maybe. Still, it was an interesting story. It made me think about it.
I was
stuff,
looking
you know?
For a Telenova. Instead, he got a
freebie.
Well, yeah. I was going to say, instead, you got like a Hallmark Channel special.
No, I was hoping for a freebie for a nice long segment full of insanity, but it was just...
Well, that's in case you've never watched one, that's a Telenova. And every episode, at some point, a woman, a hot woman with big boobs and a tight dress that's like three sizes too small, will attack a man or another woman with a knife or a gun.
Nice.
It happens in every single episode.
Huh.
Yeah.
I guess I should watch that. Yeah. It sounds like right up my alley.
I mean, I've pretty much just described every episode of every Telenova ever made.
So I guess I don't have to watch them anymore. I got the Cliff Notes version.
Which is funny because from what I can understand, it's normally older Hispanic women that watch them. Like middle-aged and older Hispanic women, so why they would even be interested in seeing...
Well, they hate men.
Like what are essentially sexed-up female characters trying to kill people.
Well, I think because they hate men, and then they, oh, yes, mio, I used to have a body like that. Wish I would have killed my husband. Maybe it's like, you know, like dad, how they say, dad porn, and so that's old Hispanic woman porn. Maybe.
I guess so. Because it's like, I'll tell you, like, my ex's mom would
not
watch
porn,
that
porn,
stuff, but
I
if
mean,
her, but if like, her husband were to walk in the room and watch for a minute, she'd probably get mad, like, because of the woman, you know, like...
No,
because
she hates men.
Well, because she sees him looking
joking.
At the screen and, you know, like, that's what I'm saying is, like, the entertainment that she enjoys would not be kosher with him.
Yeah, that's funny, because, you know, I remember my grandfather, I used to stay at my grandmother and grandfather's house, they were... on my mom's side, they were really nice, and I really loved them. But they had cable, and I never had cable. And every Saturday, we'd be sitting there, and we'd eat. And, you know, and your old people, you know, they eat like 4:30, so you're like, oh, I'm still all hopped up. And and he would, time for the senior eaters. He was talking about hee-haw. You know, those women that had the Daisy Dukes.
I have a very, very mild, a very
it was just.
very, very general memory of that.
To hear an old Pennsylvania Dutch guy go, "All right, time for the senoritas," and then you know, Hee Haw comes on. I was like, "Oh my God, what has become of this world?" He is funny. It was just one of those things where you sticks with you. Then it was the Lawrence Welk show after that, and then they go to sleep, and I could watch MTV. Back in the day when that meant something. All right, here's some music for your butt this time. Nah, just for your ears. I don't know, just listen to whatever you want.
Yeah, any body part will
work. Who am I to tell you where right. to put what part to put near the speaker at this point?
Only had one thing you haven't got.
What's that, sir?
A great big bushy beard.
It's your old pal Krusty for my new pork sandwich, the Clogger. If you can find a greasier sandwich, you're in Mexico!
Our planet may be doomed, our Earth devastated, the monsters are in revolt, and civilization is in chaos. Godzilla is laying waste to New York, Rodan is attacking Moscow, Manda is smashing London, and Peking trembles under the wrath of Mothra. Our battle cry must be, destroy all monsters. Who can say which country or city will be next? We must unite and destroy all monsters. Is there a way to defend against Godzilla, Rodan, Manda, and Mothra? The answer is no. Let our battle cry be, destroy all monsters. Be prepared. See for yourself, in color from American International. Destroy all monsters. This picture is rated G for general audiences. Destroy all monsters.
Come on, throw in a buck.
I don't tip.
You don't tip?
No, I don't believe in it.
All right, that was the Surfin' Surfers in their EP Surfers Surf. Okay, I played East Link, Red River Rock, and Penetration.
That's interesting. They're more creative with the names of their songs than they are with their own, their band name or their album name.
I want to do a co-feature of Asfort, Complete Asfortery meets Surfin' Surfers Surfin' Surf, surf, surfer, surf. Funny story about surfing
surf
surfers.
And turf.
Facebook, back when I used to like look at that, it said, hey, you should buy this. Look at this. A new band has a new album out, like a little 45. But it was like one of those EP 45s where there's like four or five songs. Well, how many? One, two, three. There's four songs on it, two on each side. I was like, oh, cool, you know. I like to buy, sometimes I buy these one-off weird albums because you're getting one of 12 or one of 80, you know, something like that. And there's some, I have one that's like one of 33. I don't know. So I order it and it comes. But I was drinking that night and I got four. So,
I remember you telling me that.
So if anyone.
So you got four out of 12.
If anyone wants a surfing, surfer, surf, surf, stick, surfers, and you let me know.
They're like, wow, somebody. On the other side of the country, I actually bought four copies of this.
So they're from like Ireland or England. They're like, they're shipped
even better.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, we're international.
There's probably four.
We have a wholesaler in the United States that's interested in us.
Yep. There's four of them in the United States, and I have the corner on that market. If this guy kills the queen or does something crazy or becomes famous, man, I'm going to cash in.
It's interesting how the first things you go towards are some kind of a criminal act that that pushes them into infamy rather than success, you know?
Well, you
being
know.
The, yeah, I know.
A surf
it's
band,
more likely.
It's a tough haul on a surf band. I mean, if they came out and like, you know, in masks and screamed as they surf, they played the surf music, then probably a little bit more of a chance. We're desensitized to quality. We just you just need somebody to punch you in the face over and over with something, and you're like, oh, that's awesome. That's our world. Oh, so sad. You know, I was thinking about saving the Toys R Us for the other show, but I mean, we could talk about it. I guess.
Do we have enough time to talk about it here?
Yeah, we could. We could talk out the rest of this segment, then we'll just do the 4 second. And we'll be all music, and everyone wins.
Okay.
So today they announced. I mean, now when I was at the Toys R Us, you told me one was closing, and I waited out a couple weeks, and I went down because I bought up a couple video games. You know, 20% off, 30% off. As soon as it hits something like that, they're all gone. So if you're there that day, you can get them, but otherwise, don't bother.
Anything decent, you know.
Yeah. So I mean, I was lucky enough to get one or two. I think it was only one game. It was just that. Who cares? So you know, and then today, and they were saying, oh no, they're just minimizing damage, and all the places that they own, they're gonna keep open, and then just these ones that are leased were not. But now, then today, they said no, they're not gonna do that either. They're done. They're cashing in their chips. You know, I don't know how to feel about that. I've seen so many big box stores go away. I saw like Pontiac, which was a car brand I loved, that went away.
Well, for the record, that one's probably not gone for good. I mean,
who knows?
GM still exists. Pontiac was just a brand.
Yeah,
and
it's one of those things where I you know, you as you get older, as you travel through life, you realize the stuff you thought just was going to be there forever ain't. Nothing is infallible. Nothing is there forever, you know.
Yeah.
So I was just, it was kind of, it just hit me because I was like, oh, maybe they'll make it, you know.
Well, it's depressing to me on a number of levels because, you know, when I was a little kid, we didn't have, when I was a really little kid, we didn't have Toys R Us. I mean, I know they were around. Toys R Us is the biggest toy retailer and was for a long time, but in my area, we had something called Lionel Playworld.
And we had Kitty City.
Yeah, which is actually, which was also owned by the same
company. We had Kitty City. I didn't have any.
Kitty City was another name for some of the Lionel Playworld locations.
That's what was in Whitehall back in the day.
Those were, I remember the first time I went to a Toys R Us, it was in Miami. And it was like I had reached Nirvana, you know, like because
Wally World,
because Lionel Playworld was cool. It had toys. It was the biggest and then there were like two toy stores in the mall, which were those little ones that were just floor to ceilings full of crap.
Yeah,
that had the little thing in the front with the little doggy going meep, 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 and what my aunt used to call the buy me get me want me crap, the you know, the cheap plastic junk that is meant to attract attention and drive parents insane.
Yeah, there was one of those that back down here down by the one of those outlet malls that had, that's where I got my Atari Jaguar.
Oh yeah.
Well, they were selling them for $12 each.
Yeah.
I sold it. It was junk. It was for me to sell a console, that tells you something, because I was like, no, and I'll be happier with the space on my closet.
Wow. Just so King of Dead Media is like, the you know, Jaguar, you are dead to me.
Yeah, wow. You are terrible.
But we had the Lionel Playworld, and it was and that was the best thing I knew up to that point. But it was kind of dingy. It was sort of dark, you know, whatever. But like the first time I walked into a Toys R Us, it was like bright. All the shelving was bright white. They had this cool concept, which was instead of having the video games all behind a counter, you know, like you could go up and they had these little flip card things that was the cover in the back of it.
Yeah.
And then they kept all the games somewhere, but you could actually look at the box information right there.
I remember
there.
Those things. And it was bright, like just like Circuit City.
Yeah.
Remember when you first time you walked into like a Circuit City or a Best Buy and you're used to like Joe's Radio Shack and whatever right. going on in the back, and you walk in like, oh my God, they have lights in here. You can see stuff, and it's exciting and wow and vibrant because kids love that kind of crap, you know.
And when they finally opened one of those here, I was on the older end of, you know, going into toy stores, but I didn't care. It was friggin' awesome.
Yep.
And I think a lot of people have that kind of a memory.
Mm.
So it's sad on that front. And now that I have a kid myself, you know, like, taking him to the toy aisle in Target or Walmart is not the same as
it's loser town.
Going into the toy store and the worst part of it though is why? Do you know what happened to Toys R Us?
Well, I read about it, that it's just this crippling debt that they've been carrying.
But do you know why they're carrying the crippling debt?
No,
that's the horror. That's
because it's not Amazon. It's not online stuff. They said that's not. I'm sure it plays a part because internet plays a part in everything in our lives. That's just the reality. But I don't. That wasn't what killed them, though, right? What?
Well, okay. Well, that became a problem. But what? Okay. So you're gonna love. You're gonna appreciate this. They were bought by a private equity firm.
Hang on, and everyone. I know where this story's going.
It was something called a leveraged buyout. And the way a leveraged buyout works, this is an oversimplification, but it's the quickest, easiest way to explain it, is essentially an investor takes out a big, big loan, putting up what they plan to buy as the full collateral for that loan. And then what they do is then they saddle the business that they bought with the debt that has to be paid back to justify the purchase. That's basically like corporate slavery.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna buy your company with money I don't have, and then make you figure out how to pay back the loan that I took out to buy you.
You're now living in the company housing. Good luck. Hope you don't run up your bill.
So basically, what happened was, is, you know, as Toys R Us had plans to modernize their stores and make them more interactive and make them more of experienced stores.
Try to keep up.
Couldn't do that because they had to pay a monthly payment on all this debt. You know, they had interest in doing things to improve their website to make them more competitive with companies like Amazon. Couldn't do that because they were spending the money they would have spent on that to cover this corporate debt. So as a result, they fell further behind. You know, the stores became a less interesting place. They started to lose shares to other retailers like Walmart and Target because they became less compelling places to go.
Well, plus then you're going, and the parents are like, we're here now.
Yeah.
Look in the damn Walmart toy aisle. I don't have time. I'm losing my mind. Just you go there, and I'm going to get the food, and then I'm going to meet you back here, and we're getting out of here.
But I mean, they became essentially less special places because they started to look more like a Lionel Playworld than what they used to be in the modern era.
Yeah.
And they couldn't keep up with the web stuff because, again, you know, like management understood the problem. There just was no way for them to fix it.
Yeah, couldn't
and
address it.
It's not like management put themselves in this position. It's not like that company was run badly that it was just a dinosaur. They were basically killed by,
by a private
equity group.
That's a shame, and that is the.
And it took a long time. I mean, it took a while. It's not like that happened last year.
Yeah, but and there's that many more people, no jobs.
33,000 people.
And then they're also saying now they're not going to be able to rent those spaces out, so they're going to be apartments,
vacant places,
or apartment complexes. You know, and then I like how every time you talk or every time I talk about these places or think about these places, and I go like, and there's still Kmart in this world. How the hell does that happen? Anytime you say, "Oh yeah, I drove by a Kmart," people go, "There's still a Kmart?" That like
I have a theory. I have a hypothesis about Kmart, and that is that Kmart serves mostly people who are mobily challenged.
They just have the best ramps.
Well, no. They. I think a large part of their audience they rely on people that they're in walking distance to.
Oh, I gotcha. Because boy,
like you probably go to Walmart, but that's 2.5 miles away. You know,
seeing a Kmart is like seeing a payphone in the wild. Like you got.
The thing is you walk into one of them, they look exactly like they did in the '80s, and that's a problem.
Kinda. I don't know.
Well, like, I'd be afraid to buy food in one because I'm looking at this stuff going like,
that's from the 80s, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, so crazy. Well, you know, I mean, I'll be the shark I am and try and score some video games, but it's kind of sad when you see stuff.
You'll feel a little bad as you plunder them.
Yeah, not really. All right, here's some music, and we'll be right back to finish up the show.
Anyone, anytime, thirst, lonely. find the head. On the lot.
You see, there's this girl, Vicky Valancourt. She may be the devil, Mama said that. Consequently, I'm prohibited from contact with her. But I hope to get past that one day, because she has to talk to.
Those darn millennials. Anyway, that was
everything,
Die All...
Blame everything on the unicorns.
Yep, that was Die All Right from Korea, a band I met twice when I was there. They were really awesome. I really dug them. Back then, they were called Midnight Smoke and Drive. Now they're this. Anyway, make sure you check out all of our bands I've played on this one and our sister show, Saki Bamagogo. They each have their own page on Facebook, so you can go there and click there and say, oh, this is great. I really love the internet. And hey, thanks, Mal and Promi. Now I'm going to be interactive with you guys, and that'll be just wonderful. So anyway, I think that's it for this week. If you stick around, like I had just said, we do the BOGO Hour of Power.
Asterisk. Sorry.
And this is from 10 to 11, of course, is the indie circuit. Then 11 at midnight is our Saki Bamagogo. That is all Japanese and Korean music. Well, and some of, you know, Asian music and lots of stupidity. So make sure you stick around for that. I guess that's it for this week, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, well, thanks. Cat's sleeping by our feet here in the illustrious Radio St. Pete studio. Snuck him in.
For those of you that really care, we'll see you again in a few. And for the rest of you...
get to know what good is. All right, yeah. We'll see you next week, everyone.